Welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. Have you ever wondered about things like Bitcoin, investing in the share market, or buying investment properties? Often the hardest thing about creating wealth is simply making a start. Making a start begins with learning. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is all about helping the everyday Kiwi create wealth through investing. None of this should be considered financial advice, but I do hope it gets you thinking. Let's get started. Thank you for listening into the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. I will do my very best to make sure that the content today is of value and will improve your life in some aspect. So today we're talking about your greatest asset. We're talking about you, your life, your health specifically. I'm catching up with the CEO of NIB Health Insurance. They've been around in the market for some time in New Zealand, but they're one of our newer insurers. I personally have recommended NIB to some of my clients in terms of being a provider for health insurance for them. So I caught up with Rob Hennin today, and just to have a general chat around health insurance, the benefits, why would you bother having it? Because this is a question that comes up a lot. To be honest, the public health system in New Zealand is awesome. So it is a really valid question to ask. Why would you bother taking out private medical insurance? It doesn't make sense. And I have another question for you. Why are we talking about this on a wealth podcast, right? Well, really simply put, you are the biggest asset. So if we don't talk about you in some capacity, then really we're not talking about wealth, are we? So this is why we're talking about it. It's really important. You may have some questions around how health insurance works. And so at the end of this episode, I'm going to take you through a 7-step checklist for medical insurance. If you currently have medical insurance and you wonder if it's any good, or if you're thinking about making a change, or you're pondering why would you have it, then I'm just going to take you through 7 steps to consider before you take out insurance or before you review it. So keep on listening to the end of the episode and you'll hear that 7-step checklist. So without further ado, let's get started. Welcome, Rob Hennin, CEO of NIB. Thanks for
coming. Thank you, Darcy.
Fantastic to have you here.
Thank you.
And we're catching up in the midst of the great fire in Sky City.
Yeah.
And it's been an interesting sort of way of learning about how things happen that are bad, and things are kind of like, you kind of go along down your journey and everything seems honky-dory, and then all of a sudden some random event happens and you didn't expect that. And so we're catching up and we're talking about insurance.
Yeah.
Or specifically, I guess, we're talking about taking care of the biggest asset that we have, which is ourself.
Yeah. And the way we look at it is your better health. How do you look after you so that you can look after your family, so that you can do the things that you want to achieve in life?
Everything going well, you're going to achieve a lot of pretty awesome things in your life, your career, your relationship, maybe growing a family, growing some wealth that you'll pass on for generations. But it's all predicated on the assumption that you're still going to be alive and able to work and able to actually be fit enough to enjoy these things, right?
Absolutely right. Yeah. And I think the enjoyment piece is really important. Doing the things that you want to achieve, having the kind of health and the kind of health outcomes that you particularly want.
Yeah, because it's not enough to be alive to do these things, but you need to actually be alive to enjoy them, and to enjoy them, you kind of need to be in good health.
Yeah, happy, safe, yeah. Healthy.
Awesome. So let's just kind of take a bird's eye view of what the options are in New Zealand. So I want to drill down and talk about health insurance, and you are the man to talk to about that. You're the first person that we've had on this podcast to actually discuss the topic of insurance. And I've been meaning to do it for a while, and I'm keen to do it in a way that doesn't kind of turn people off, like, oh, this is just insurance, and then insurance is one of those either luxury goods or pain in the butt things that we just have to do. In New Zealand, we have a public health system. Why do we need private health insurance?
For a couple of reasons. And if you think about the recent health and disability review that's just been published, I mean, what that clearly says is that we've got a reasonable public health system, but it has some cracks. It says it's a bit fragmented. It says it's a bit complicated. And so one of the wonderful things about private health insurance, and if you think about NIB, who are I represent here today, we think of ourselves not just as a health insurer, but as a health partner for our members. Okay. And so what we're trying to do is, yes, help protect you, help, you know, make sure that you as an NIB member have access to the financial protection. You can fund the healthcare that you particularly want. But also, how do you navigate? We help you navigate the system and then hopefully empower you, give you the tools that you need to make better health decisions.
Got it. There's the public system reality, and then the other reality where you could either self-fund
mm-hmm.
or use a private funding vehicle like an insurance company. The outcomes, let's just say for argument's sake, that the outcome will be the same. You're going to get the hip operation.
Yeah.
But the distance between now and when you need to get that hip operation done might be longer in the public health system. So time is one of the things, right?
The research would say that on average it's 100 days quicker to have elective surgery in the private system than in the public. So on average it's about 176, 177 days to get, you know, if you're on a waiting list to get your surgery in the public system, and it's about 76 days in private. And so, again, if you think of coming back to where we started, which was, you know, feeling healthy, being able to do the things that you want, how much pain are you prepared to bear? And whether it's working or whether it's playing golf or whether it's chasing the grandchildren or even your own children, how long, you know, do you really want to be able to not do the things that you want to do? Well, you want that to be as short as possible.
Like, I've got a sore knee, and that I might be heading towards that at some stage.
Right.
And I know that it's probably like it's going to get worse before it gets better. And the thing that will turn it around will probably be surgery. But I might, maybe I might be in levels of pain that make it too uncomfortable for me to work. I might snap at my kids more than I normally do. I might.
Hopefully not.
I might kick my cat further than I need
to.
Oh,
no, don't do that. Don't do that. Yeah.
But the surgery that I need, yeah, I want it to get done as soon as I possibly can. I guess the public system is great in New Zealand, but private just gives you the funding vehicle to access it quicker. You can access it as quick as you want, as long as you can pay for it.
Darcy, I think about it a little bit like this. If you can, it'd be ideal to have choices. So you can wait, you can have stuff done now. The beauty of private health insurance is that you can choose.
Right.
The other thing, think about, you know, we do sometimes think about insurance in a kind of binary way. We have it, we don't. Think about NIB as being more of a partner to help you make those decisions. So just like a financial advisor, someone that you can go to get advice, to talk about these things, to talk about your options. Because, and let's take your knee as being a really good example. One way of looking at it is you could pay $20,000 to have that done quickly, or you could have insurance and get it done quickly.
Yeah.
Insurance doesn't cost you $20,000. Another way of looking at it is, what about having a discussion about how could you stay out of hospital?
Got
you know, how could you put it off? You know, you might not want surgery now. You might say, well, you know, what other choices do I have?
Mm.
And the good thing about private health insurance, and particularly if you talk to us at NIB, we'll give you some options. We'll give you some programs. We'll help you, if you want to, we'll help you stay out of hospital.
Gotcha. So I just want to highlight a specific example there where the health insurance provider could be seen more as a partner rather than like the ultimate source of taking care of all of your problems. It's just a partner. And one of the examples of that would be having an excess on your policy so that
yeah.
you pay maybe the first $250 or even up to, say, $1,000 or more.
Yeah. So, I mean, excesses range between, well, $250 and they go as high as like $6,000.
Yeah.
So you could, again, have a choice. You can say, look, for simple, small things, I'm happy to self-fund.
Yeah.
You know, I look at the top claims we pay every month. And if you look at, you know, what's in the top 10, there'll be a back operation in there, $70,000.
Yeah, that's
right?
crazy.
There'll be knees and hips in there regularly at $20,000 or $30,000. There'll be some heart operations that sit anywhere around the $50,000 to the $70,000.
Yeah.
And look, cancer, you know, it might be that we've got things early and we're, able to help you get the treatment you want, and it's only $20,000, but it could be hundreds of thousands
That's
of dollars.
Right.
Do you want to sell the house? Private health insurance does give you some choices.
Yes.
To get things done quickly.
I guess when you have a family, you hear stories, or you have a big circle of friends, you hear stories of people that are going through some stuff. And, you know, my father-in-law went, you know, I don't know how many spinal fusions he's had, but I think in 1 year they clocked up $120,000 worth of spinal fusions. These aren't cheap bits that you can replace, like parts on your car. These are expensive items.
They are. And they are transformational, aren't they?
Oh, totally.
So, you know, you go from being, you know, really unwell, not able to do things, to, you know, after the surgery, kind of, you have a new lease on life.
Yeah.
But again, if we come back to the partnering piece, the discussion we'd like to have in conjunction with the surgeon and perhaps, you know, some of the business partners that we work with is, what about the prehab? What are you doing before the operation? How are you prepared for the operation? And then afterwards, you know, one of the reasons we have healthcare professionals on staff and wellness coaches is, you know, what are you doing afterwards? So if you've had a major back operation, what's the rehab plan? How can we help? How can we fund that? You know, you want to be on the exercise cycle, or you want to be back on the program, because that's how you heal faster.
Correct.
So yes, there's the insurance piece, there's the protection piece, the funding piece, but there's also the connecting, you know, how do we help you navigate through the system, get the more comprehensive, you know, care that you need, and then how do we, again, help you make a better decision?
Ultimately, and this might sound odd, but the interests of the insurer is very closely aligned to the insured.
Should be.
I see a lot of claims with the clients that I work with where that absolutely happens, where, you know, to give you an example, the insurer does pay for stuff like the, you mentioned prehab.
Yeah.
And other benefits or other services or other gestures or whatever you want to call it that is not in the policy document, often that happens because it's in the insurer's best interest, of course, that you get off, you know, that you're well as soon as you can, you get back to work. But obviously, no one wants to be sick anyway, so you want it to get it done too, right? So that's a good example of, I guess, how there is an alignment of interest and it leads to a good outcome for people, right? It's not just about give me your money and every now and then, if I have to, I'll pay you some money for your hip.
Yeah. Well, and the other way we look at it, you know, so we are a business, and if we want to have a sustainable business going forward, what's the best way to do that is to have happy members.
Yeah.
What's the best way to do that? It's not just to pay, right? It's also to help them, again, achieve the outcomes they want. If that involves getting involved beforehand or after, we want to get involved because we know that's a much better member experience.
Going back to the public health system in New Zealand, I hear this quite often that the public health system is good, especially with kids. You know, hey, it's free. Why would I ever want to get health insurance for my kids? Because, you know, GP visits are free and they're young. What's going to happen to them? Like, why would I bother? And I know that might be what some people would be thinking right now who have children. They might be thinking, why would I bother getting health insurance on my kids? What would you say to that?
The public system's good, but you look at the demands as New Zealand grows in terms of its total population, as the population ages, and also as we as individuals, as Kiwis, we want to do more, we have more demands on the health system. The cost of sustaining the public health system just goes up and up and up. At the moment, it's sitting, you know, kind of just around the $20 billion a year.
Wow.
It's the kind of major area that our taxes go on. So at the end of the day, it's not free. We're paying, Darcy.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not the government, it's us.
We are paying, so it's not free. And to continue for it just to deliver what it's delivering today, let alone what we want it to deliver for us in the future, well, the cost is just going to go up. The opportunity, I think, in terms of the overall system is to have the most efficient system possible, is to have the public system and private working hand in hand to deliver better outcomes and to deliver better outcomes as efficiently as possible.
How does that actually work though? Because it's a choice, right? I could choose to take out medical insurance on my kid, or I might choose not to. So how do you get that alignment between the public and the private here?
Let's look at this in two ways. You know, one is, you know, how much does it cost to insure your children? Well, it's actually pretty cheap.
It's cheaper than your cat.
Right? It's pretty cheap. In fact, you know, some of the policies are like $2 a week.
Yeah.
And again, if you look at the value you get, and you know, I've heard people say, and look, you're an advisor, so you've probably heard it more than me, but, you know, but kids don't get sick. Well, kids actually do get sick. You know, whether it's tonsils, whether it's adenoids, and, you know, sometimes you're on a long waiting list for that. You can have it done tomorrow or next week. That makes an enormous difference to how your child not only feels, but how they're able to learn. You think about getting access to eye tests, getting access to hearing tests, getting access to vaccinations, getting just going to the GP without any, you know, kind of worrying about whether you can afford the gap payment. Those are all benefits of having private health insurance.
Mm.
And so I would say, you know, I would encourage people if they can afford it. I think it's a really good thing, even for children. And at the end of the day, while it's not that common, children, you know, sometimes, you know, do have things that need done to their knees and their backs and you know, their hearts and just the same way everybody else.
Where you're coming from there, I guess, is the perspective of getting value for it in the short to medium term, but even long term, if you insure a child right away, like within 3 months of birth, ideally, then you're not going to have exclusions.
That's right.
And that's the real value I see long term.
And so, you know, as you get older, you do build up and, you know, we call it pre-existing conditions.
And it
just means you are human.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But you build those up. Well, and they cost more. And so, but the good thing is if you have insurance from a young age, whether it be children or whether it be teenagers or whether it be into your, you know, 20s and 30s, you do get it at a very reasonable rate. And then all of your pre-existing conditions are covered.
Do you mind just explaining what a pre-existing condition is and what an exclusion is, just really quickly for our listeners?
If you have a condition, and you mentioned, Darcy, you know, you've got something with your knee. You weren't specific, but when you come to fill out your form to be insured, we're going to ask you, you know, what is that? And you'll declare, you'll either know or you'll say, I've got a sore knee. And, you know, we're going to say, well, before we insure that, could you go to the doctor and get it checked? And if it's something that already exists and it's already reasonably serious, therefore we can guarantee that you're going to have an operation, we're going to consider that a pre-existing condition. And therefore you're either going to have it excluded, so in other words, we're not going to cover it going forward, or we're going to say it's going to cost you more to have that covered. Get in early while you don't have any.
Most,
if you think of 20 and 30-year-olds, they don't have many of these things.
That's right.
And so therefore their premiums are, you know, relatively inexpensive and they can get most things covered, not everything covered.
And there's the great tension or the paradox, I guess, is that when you're young, you don't feel a need for it. You don't see a need for it. But that's actually when it should be done. Everything is always upside down in this space, eh? Because when you don't feel like it is when you do it.
You come back to, let's just say you're a young couple and you've just bought a house. You immediately go to, we better protect this. Right, you know, you could have an unfortunate fire, and we've just seen an example of that, you know, with a really big building in Auckland just in the last few days, or you could have a terrible weather event or a natural disaster. We don't think twice about insuring our house. Your body's the same. At the end of the day, today we're both fit and healthy. But you don't know what could happen to you tomorrow.
That's right.
And all private health insurance is just making those choices early.
Got it.
To make sure that you've got the protection you need.
Fantastic. Good explanation. I'm just going to grab this really quickly and just have a look at
that. Check your notes.
Yeah, check my notes. How do you feel about that so far? We're good so far?
If you're happy with this style of just chatting, then
that's
I'm happy with that as well.
Definitely not. You're a natural, Rob. You've done this before.
I have done...
You've done a few things like this, haven't you?
A lot of this, but different categories,
context.
Right?
Yeah. Lots of advisors or industry.
I was always, and I'm always slightly uncomfortable with doing interviews and things like this, but I started 20 years ago, working in the media industry. I didn't like it. You just practice and practice and practice, and then later on, and I say this to my guys now who are doing communications at work, do it on video.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, I hate it. And I go, yeah, I know, but to a discussion you and I were having before, people will watch
it.
Yeah. Whereas if you send them an email or stand up and talk to them, they've already tuned out, right?
That's right. Oh, totally.
So
I've
got to the stage where you just have to do it. And if it doesn't go well, you just practice differently next time.
That's right. Yeah, and it's a good way to get better, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of like, I guess that's what's going to set us apart from the robots in the future, right?
Our ability to persuade. I feel pretty confident whether it's medical technology or whatever else, there'll be a good place for human beings.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that, actually. Okay, so going forward, let's just fast forward, 20 years or so. What's the biggest challenges that we have as Kiwis in terms of getting access to medical treatment, whether it be via the public health system or via private health system? What would you say to that?
The really big challenge is, despite us human beings, fundamentally being the same physiologically, is that we all have different needs.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in the fact that the human race, and let's take it as Kiwis, we advance. Yeah. Things, you know, we get better, but we also, as we do that, we get more demanding. And so if you go forward 20 years, we are going to want more healthcare. We're going to want it faster. The thing we're going to really want, I think, as individuals, Darcy, you and I, is we're going to want to stay out of hospital. We're going to want to know more about ourselves, and we're going to want those who are helping us, whether it be the clinicians, you know, whether it be your GP, physio, whatever, whether it be even you yourself, you're going to want to know more about the risks, you know, you have, and you're going to want to act on them more quickly so that you can stay out of hospital, so that you can stay healthy.
I never thought about it like that, though. That whole kind of picture of wanting more as you your expectations will always grow, right? It's like having children.
They will.
They always want more and more and more.
Yeah, and I think we will have, you know, if you think about choices, and I don't have my mobile with me, it's one of the few times, right?
Yeah.
But we'd normally be, okay, well, where is that? How does it look? We'll be researching something, and we'll be making, you know, faster decisions. What choices do we have? The same thing in health. I guess most people today are reactive. They don't feel well. They then go to a doctor who tells them that they're not well and that we're going to treat it. Think about it in 20 years' time of, I don't want to be sick. So I'll be having the discussion with my doctor of, and we're beginning to do this today. Yeah. So how old am I? I'm a 35-year-old male. Let's be aspirational.
Let's be very aspirational.
Let's be aspirational. I'm a 35.
One of us more aspirational than the other, but yeah, we'll let the listeners decide.
So I'm a 35-year-old male. I'm talking to my doctor. What things should I be thinking about? What tests should I be having? And I'm not talking about the worried well. I'm talking about, you know, having a responsible discussion. Think about your car. What do you do? You have a warrant of fitness every year. Right?
Yeah.
That you go in there and they have a look at the car, you have an expert look at the car, and they check that things are safe. What do you also do? The car turns over, let's say 30,000 kilometres. What do? You take it in for a 30,000K service. They don't service everything, but they look at the things that need to be looked at, and they anticipate the next 10,000 kilometres or the next 20,000 kilometres. Think about that with your health. That's what we should be doing.
Got it.
We should be doing that today, but often today we go to the doctor and he goes, how are you? And we go, I'm sick. And you go, well, what's wrong with you? I think I've got the flu. Okay, so there we go. Think about it. The discussion would be much more fruitful of, I'm here for my annual warrant of fitness.
Sure, yeah.
What do I need to think about now? What do I need to think about for the next 5 years?
Got it.
Let's have that discussion.
Yeah.
Don't go to test, whatever else, but what are those things? And also, from a lifestyle point of view, because a lot of the reason we're not well isn't to do with, you know, some really nasty thing that we were always going to get, right? A lot of it's to do with our lifestyle.
Yeah.
What are the things I need to think about? What are the things I need to change? And what tools can we provide as a health insurer to help you make those decisions?
Good. It's so important that we're having a conversation like this, because in the context of building wealth, wellness, health, you cannot actually separate it. But I know that a lot of people right now might be thinking, well, we're learning about building wealth. Why are we talking about health? They are absolutely intertwined and part of the same thing.
Yeah.
If you cannot guarantee that the income will keep coming in due to some health event, you cannot keep putting funds aside to build your ultimate nest egg.
Yeah.
So this is absolutely critical that we're mindful of this, right? And I love that analogy of just going and getting a health check, because it makes sense.
Well, I've done some renovating recently, and so I've had some tradespeople in and out of the house.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're lucky enough to be home while they're doing things, and you can see them, and they've got a sore back, or they've got a sore knee, or you know, whatever else, and you go, well, why wouldn't you just go and get that fixed? Oh, I can't afford it. Surely you're in business for yourself. Surely you'd have private health insurance, wouldn't you? Because time is money, and you want to choose when you have that surgery.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, there'll be good times for you as a self-employed, you know, person, and not so good times. And I'm stunned at the number of people who say they haven't. Again, you want to be able to make those choices because you want to stay well.
It's that whole kind of proactivity thing, isn't it? A lot of us just wait for stuff to happen to us. We'll retire when retirement age happens. Unless you're being proactive and you choose to obtain these outcomes, this stuff doesn't happen to you. You need to actually make it happen, right? So health insurance ain't going to just roll on top of you. You need to actually go out and sort it out.
And not just health insurance. I think making some of those good decisions that go with it. I'm thinking of a young guy I work with, and I know he's made some dramatic changes in his lifestyle in the last few years. And the reason he made those is the birth of his daughter. And I remember standing at the Christmas party. We were both having a beer at the Christmas party, and I remember standing talking to him, going, "You're looking really good. You know, you're working out and whatever." I said, "Oh yeah, I'm on a program and I'm, you know, playing touch and doing all this kind of stuff." And I said, "Oh well, you know, because I've worked with this guy for about 6 years." Okay. And I said, "Oh, what made you do that?" And he said, "I want to be able to run with my daughter. She's just turned 4, and there were certain things, you know, without going into too much detail." He was on a path where he wouldn't be able to do that.
Sure. People don't really realize this, but when you're involved in the financial services or the insurance space, you see a lot of amazing stories.
Yes, you do.
Unbelievable life-transforming stories because people decided to be proactive at some point in time, for whatever reason, whether it was children or some other reason, they decided to actually be on the front foot rather than be passive. But when you see these things unfold and you think, wow, this is amazing, you can always trace it back to a decision they made. And whatever that is for whoever's listening, you know, it's important that you have that moment, and when it happens that you act on it and you don't just forget it. Like when you, you know, find out that you're having a kid.
Yeah.
That's a great time to start thinking about stuff like this.
And I think our industry is one of the great industries. I know that sometimes insurance gets a bad rap. Working for a private health insurer, being an advisor, is one of the best careers around. We pay $500,000 worth of claims a day.
Amazing, isn't it?
You know, and the way I think about that is, you know, there are people, there's $500,000 going in to help people get the health outcomes that they want there and then when they need it. I'd like that to be $1 million a day. I mean, wouldn't that be a great thing to achieve?
You're going to go back to the office and have all these claim forms completed. Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, we're there to help people.
That's
and
right.
And again, you know, one of the things that a financial advisor does, and yes, there's the wealth piece, but it's also the a financial advisor is almost like a life coach at times.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You're a counselor. You're a therapist, you're an analyst, you're all that sort of stuff.
All of those.
You're
things.
A claims person.
Yeah.
It's and you're right. It's absolutely amazing. We do have a lot of clients of ours actually do have cover with NIB, and just to touch on NIB if you don't mind a little bit, because a while ago NIB didn't exist in New Zealand, and all
That's
of a sudden
right.
it did.
NIB has a wonderful history. We started as the health arm of in Newcastle in Australia of literally the predecessor of BHP Steel.
Okay.
So we were the community arm, the trust, if you like, that looked after the health of the steel workers in Newcastle.
Okay.
Right. So really interesting history. Started about 65 years ago. So it's been around for a long time.
Yeah. What does it stand for again?
And so it originally stood for Newcastle Industrial Benefits.
Really?
Yeah.
Makes
so
sense.
Going back to those early community roots.
Yeah.
And then it's become a very successful private health insurer, you know, one of the big ones in Australia. Yeah. And back in 2012-13, we bought the Tower Health business off Tower Insurance. We launched in New Zealand in 2013 with 1% brand awareness.
Nice.
And it came from, we sponsored the New South Wales Blues State of Origin team. And so NIB was on the front of the jersey there. And so about 1% of New Zealanders knew who we are.
Yeah.
Now a lot more people know who we are.
But from my perspective anyway, you're absolutely on that top three.
Thank you.
I'm not going to be catching up with those guys.
Yep.
I'm just going to hang out with these guys over here.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that from the perspective of claims, because ultimately that's where my promise gets fulfilled. That's
yes,
when,
does.
You know, what I say to
and,
people.
And
happens.
Ours.
Of course. Yeah, ultimately. Right?
Yeah.
And so from a claims point of view, it really, it would be horrible to actually go through a process where there was some sort of problem. And luckily, touch wood, that has not happened yet.
Yeah.
Looking at the New Zealand market specifically, how do you see things unfolding, say, again, going back to that 20-year time frame, because that's when I'll be getting close to retirement. What's it going to look like when I'm 65?
let's start with demography. So New Zealand is shifting in an exciting way. I mean, the population's growing. I think that's a good thing, right? Economically, that's a great thing. Yeah. It comes with some challenges for us, but a growing population base is a good thing.
Yeah.
We're seeing an aging population, but we're also seeing a tremendous increase in diversity of our New Zealand population. If you go forward 20 years, that makes life much more interesting and much more complex.
Yeah.
And so if you say, well, what does that mean for the health system? It means more complex, more demanding than it is today. Mm. And people will want more choices. Why? Because there'll be different kinds of people.
Mm.
If you then come back to, well, what does that mean for public? Well, the Health and Disability Review has already stated that the system is already complex and fragmented. And I think the words that the chairman used were, we could do better. So the public system really has to do better, and that costs. And if you come back to then what's the opportunity for private, I really think it is to meet people where they are and give people a choice, give people that flexibility. Yes, it comes at a cost, but increasingly I think people will be prepared to pay for that flexibility and that certainty of being able to get the healthcare that they want.
Okay.
In terms of technology, I think it's particularly exciting. In 20 years' time, you'll have more choices.
Yeah.
You'll be able to make decisions to help keep yourself out of hospital. Technology will definitely assist that, whether it be in a clinical sense or whether it be, you know, in a straight empowerment through your mobile of being able to know what I should be doing today. Oh, I'm on medication. Oh, I've got to take it now. Those kind of reminders. I think it'll come down to some things will definitely be cheaper.
Yeah.
Access will be easier. And then there'll be just more choices. I don't know whether you've been following David Down's story.
No,
so David, journalist, I believe he's a comedian. He's got a wonderful TEDx talk. And David's had cancer. In fact, he was diagnosed with having terminal cancer. It's a wonderful story, and I won't do it justice in the time, but he ended up going to Harvard Medical School and getting CAR T-cell therapy, which is $1 million therapy.
Wow, okay.
Right? Funded it himself with the help of, you know, friends and family. It's been, at the moment, he's in remission, so that's an amazing story for someone who's given a really dire prognosis. Well, there are lots of those drugs coming down the pike. In 20 years' time, there'll be many of those. Will the public system fund them? Probably not. People are going to want to have choices. For you and me, do we want to sell the house? Do we want to mortgage the cat? No, we don't.
No.
What we'll want to do is be able to have choices and have a partner to be able to help you, you know, make those decisions. Mm.
So if I was to speculate and describe a future, when I'm 65, I'm going to guess that due to this demographic bulge moving, you know, the rat moving down the snake, when I'm at that age and I really am starting to become a lot more dependent on medical treatment and services, there'd be a lot more load on the public health system. And I'm guessing the two levers they can pull is to divert more tax revenue towards that spend, or they could restrict access. And then I'm also thinking now, well, that's great for me. I don't mind. I've got private health insurance.
Mm.
I'll be sweet. But I'm also thinking, well, they've got the two levers as well that they could pull. They could either change what their policy does so that they're not going to pay out for experimental treatment or the latest and greatest type of treatment, or they could just crank up the insurance premiums on me due to this thing that we call medical inflation until it gets too hot in the kitchen. I got to get out and I got to cancel my policy, and no one's going to win there. So am I being a bit negative here?
You know, in terms of laying out the landscape, that's a really responsible way of looking at it. The way I think about it, my job is to make sure that the cover you take out is affordable and sustainable. And how do I do that? Well, I do that a number of ways. I do it in terms of making sure that we control our costs. And so we have the First Choice Network. We make sure that what we're paying for is the right thing to be paying for, so the surgery is needed. And also we're paying the right price, because at the end of the day, inflation's driven by how much it's used and also an efficient price. So keeping things efficient.
Yeah.
And you've got to imagine that in future, in some areas, there'll be less surgery rather than more.
Right.
And the reason being, we should have access to the information and the treatments we need to keep people out of hospital. Hospitals are quite expensive.
Yeah.
There will be some of these amazing, let's call them curative treatments, coming right. down. The million-dollar treatments. But again, look at the cost of pharmaceuticals and also look at the cost of computing. Yes, they start high, but the cost plummets.
Correct.
I think you have to have some confidence in the fact that competition will prevail.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the price of health insurance or whether it's the price of pharmaceuticals or robotics or whatever,
yeah.
at the end of the day, there will be choices.
And there'll always be an argument for just relying on the public or going private, even in the future, because there's a difference between that will persist. And I suspect that they'll diverge over time.
I would also argue, Darcy, that it isn't just either or.
Sure.
Probably the most efficient model going forward will be a combination of the two. There are things the public system, if you think about acute treatments and accidents, the public system is ideally placed to do that.
Yeah.
There are also other things like elective surgery, perhaps case management, prehab and rehab, you know, that kind of thing. Being a health partner, I think we can play an amazing useful role in that perhaps the public system, yes, it could do that, but is that the right focus for the public purse? Probably not.
No, and I think I honestly believe that the private sector can deliver better outcomes than the public in a lot of arenas. And I'm not saying that we do away with the government in this space, but I think that the role that private health insurers play will possibly become increasingly important as there's more of a need to unlock efficiencies and efficiencies and public stuff. Those two phrases don't work together very well.
And the other way of looking at it is, you know, and I certainly think about it in terms of our business and what we do. We're very happy to connect people between the public and the private system. Sometimes it's the best thing that we can advise someone to do is go straight to public,
right?
Because they need it. And sometimes it is, we will help you. You know, you're in public today, we can get things done much faster now in private, come and do this way. And so we do see, you know, ourselves as a bit of a navigator through that, in and out of the public and the private system.
Got it.
To get you the fastest, most efficient treatment possible.
Got it. And changing tack a little bit here, I'm a small, medium-sized business, let's say I have 20-odd employees in the construction industry or something like that. And why, as an employer, as a business owner, would I be wise in making sure my employees had medical insurance? How does that benefit me? Sure, I want to be seen to be doing right by my employees and all that sort of stuff, right? But how does it actually benefit my bottom line? Because I'm going to be paying for these premiums potentially. Yeah. So talk me through that. What's the economics behind that?
Well, I would look at it as a business owner from a couple of perspectives. I would look at it from the perspective of workplace health and safety, creating an environment for your employees that is safe, that is happy and healthy, because that is your duty of care as the owner of the business or as a director of the business. And so I think there are very good cultural reasons.
Yep. Yep,
and also regulatory reasons for you to consider private health insurance as part of your workplace health and safety strategy. From an engagement point of view with your workmates, teammates, your employees, we know from the recent SEEK survey that one of the most favoured benefits from an employee point of view is to have private health insurance.
Sure.
So they value it highly, your employees. And so again, it's a really good engagement tool. And then if I think of the overall area of health, one of the things that having private health insurance does is, yes, we pay claims, but we have a wonderful opportunity to work with you as a business owner and help you look at the overall health of your working population. So we have some really good tools like MyHealthHQ, health risk assessments, whatever, where you can actually get some information, de-identified, confidential.
Yeah.
That gives you a feel for what is the overall health of your working population.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So it's not personalized information.
It's not personalized. It's just aggregated,
general information.
General.
But you can actually get a picture, like a heat map of what are some of your employees kind of going through? What are the top three issues?
And whether it be physical or whether it be mental. The bottom line is you're paying anyway. If you had data to make a better decision, you'd probably change the way you pay. You'd probably change your investment mix, whether it be workplace health and safety, overall engagement, or health.
Yeah.
And you'd get a better outcome.
Gotcha.
But I don't think you'd pay more.
In other words, the benefits exceed the cost, right?
Yeah. And gotcha. And
maybe even
I think you'd just change what you invested in.
Yeah.
Because we're all doing lots of things, whether it be engagement activities, workplace health and safety, or health itself.
Got it. Great. Now, before we finish up, I wanted just to talk about the big C. I want to talk about cancer because it's something that affects too many people. And it's a horrific, horrible thing to actually witness and either go through yourself or see someone go through it. As it unfolds in someone's lives when they have health insurance and they go through a cancer experience, I've seen a lot of, usually it is women, but sometimes it's men, kind of have to go through mastectomies and stuff like that. And from treatment to post-op, how can health insurance help me more than just going through the public health system?
Apart from just funding the care you need, you know, our policies do that. I think the area that we as a health partner add the most value is through our wellness coaches and our care consultants.
Okay.
People will come in through for a pre-approval for their operation, and that's probably the first inkling we have that they have cancer.
Yeah.
And so apart from getting them the pre-approval so that it's as effortless for them as possible and they can get the treatment as fast as possible, it's then about, you know, having someone on our team who can engage with them and help them prepare for the operation. Obviously, you know, the clinicians do the operation, but then also help them recover. So that's really important.
Mm.
And then also just giving them advice on, you know, what treatments are available to them and what questions to ask.
Yeah.
So we fund on a number of our policies non-pharmac drugs.
Right.
They can be quite transformational.
Define pharmac for our listeners.
The way to think about it is, you know, there are drugs that are available, you know, through the public system that you only pay $5 for when you pick up the prescription.
Yeah.
They're the kind of pharmac approved and pharmac funded. But there's another list of very effective, very efficient drugs that are not that cheap because they're not subsidized by the government. But they can be incredibly effective for different treatments.
Yes.
And so with, you know, private health insurance policies, you can get access to those drugs.
Yes.
And that can just help you treat the condition faster.
Awesome.
And better. You know, we can help people, you know, as they, you know, they're interacting with their physician, you know, they can ask the questions, you know, what are you recommending? You know, can I get access to this? And of course, you know, if they've got the right policy, then it's funded. You know, and this is where it does get complicated. And this is where you really do want a financial advisor.
Yeah.
Because you want to, you want to think about those things before you have to think about them.
Totally. It's really important, eh? And I think
it is.
You know, again, wrapping this up in the context of wealth is really important. Wealth, health, wellness. You can't really have one without the other. Even if you build massive piles of money and you're sorted in retirement and you're sick, what's the point?
Yeah.
But Rob, I really want to thank you for coming in.
No, thank you, Darcy. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Now, is there, before we finish up, is there any parting last words of wisdom that you want to give people out there?
The best advice I could give to anybody, which is the same advice I would kind of give to my children, which is go and talk to someone early. If you know a financial advisor, go and talk to them.
Yeah.
Go and get the advice you need. If you don't, just call someone like NIB.
Yeah.
The earlier you have that discussion, the more choices you have.
Awesome. Well done. And I really appreciate that. And thank you for that endorsement as well. Rob, appreciate it. Thank you. And we'll catch you next time.
Okay. Thank you, Darcy.
Cheers. Okay, so thank you again, Rob Hennon, CEO of NIB Health Insurance. Now, I'm going to introduce you to a 7-step checklist for medical insurance. Number 1, know what the plan does. Number 2, make sure it's sustainable. Number 3, what about pre-existing conditions? Number 4, what about workplace schemes? Number 5, your children. Should we even bother adding them to our policy? Number 6, your parents. Why do I care about your parents? And number 7, how should you obtain medical insurance? So let's get started. Number 1, know what the plan does. Now, if you already have medical insurance or you're keen to get it, know what the heck it is, know what it will do, and know what it won't do. There is a considerable amount to know, and the importance of understanding this is that it will set your expectations correctly for the time when you try to make a claim. For example, many plans
will pay out a cash amount if you're admitted into the public hospital for any reasons. Most plans will cover sterilization after a few years of cover. Ironically, it's called the loyalty benefit. Some medical cover will cover you for childbirth-related stuff. Others don't. Some will pay for more treatment options than others. So read the policy document that you get with your medical insurance plan and understand it. Make sure that if you have any questions that you clarify it before the policy starts. So I'm going to cover the three most common components now in the medical insurance world. The first one is the surgical or the treatment benefit. Now this covers you for surgery and follow-up treatment associated with dealing with stuff if stuff is found and needs to be dealt with. Number two, the specialist and test benefit. This pays for specialist consultations, diagnostic testing and imaging, etc. Number three, the GP, dental, optical, or the prescription benefit. This is an optional add-on that you can add on to your plan as well with some providers. And there you go. So those are the three most common sort of things that you see inside of a medical insurance plan. Number two, the second step to consider for medical insurance is sustainability. Now, even though the medical insurance premiums fit you today, they may not be affordable in the future. This is a reality, and we need to talk about this. In the future, this type of insurance will become very important. Medical insurance will become very important in the future. So it's critical that you understand how you are going to sustain this cover long-term. Not just now, but long-term. Now, the premiums increase because of three main things. Age. You're going to get older. The older you get, the closer you get to death, the more likely things will fall off before you get dead. Number two, claims inflation. So this is something which is kind of closely tied to demographics. If the insurer that you're dealing with has a lot of old people in it who need to get their hips, their knees, their shoulders repaired, maintained as they get older, then that insurer will have a lot of claims. And one of the levers they can pull to manage that is to increase your premiums. Number three, medical inflation. Changing costs of treatment over time. As medical technology gets better, it gets more expensive to cover for treatment. More options in terms of medicine, for example, that may or may not be funded will also cause medical inflation. So your premiums will increase because of age, claims inflation, and medical inflation. Now, to manage those premiums in the future, you could consider some of the following. You could change your plan. Ideally, stay with your current insurer, but move to a cheaper option. Usually, this means that you're covered for less, by the way, but less insurance, less cost, some insurance, better than no insurance. Number two, you could remove some of the options, like get rid of the GP option, or the dental, or the optical, or even the specialist and tests. Remove the extra add-on options, and your premiums will go down. Number three idea for managing the premiums in the future that you could consider is increase the excess. Often you might have no excess or only $250 excess, and an excess, by the way, is just you paying the first bit of the cost. But you can increase the excess from where you're at right now all the way to several thousand, and this has the impact of decreasing the cost considerably because you're sharing the cost with the insurer. So it doesn't matter how awesome you think your plan is if in one day you have to let it go, right when you're probably most likely to use it. Sustainability. It's really important that you can sustain your plan long term. Number three, the third step in the checklist for medical insurance. What about pre-existing conditions? Now, you won't take out insurance on your car after you get into an accident. So it's exactly the same way with medical insurance. The insurer will only be keen to insure the healthy bits of you, not the bits that have already been investigated because you had a sore or whatever. Medically, you may be totally fine, but if you've had several moles removed, as an example, you may not be covered for this if the event happened prior to the medical policy starting. If you took out insurance when you were really young, no problems, as you likely didn't have any issues way back then. But two things could happen when you apply for insurance. You may be excluded for that pre-existing condition, i.e. they won't cover you for it, or you may pay a higher premium to accommodate for the extra risk that you pose. Now, if you have exclusions, or if you want to take out insurance and you find out that actually you're going to be excluded for, you know, your munted big right toe or this rash that never goes away, you might feel that that's just a little bit unfair, and you might get a little bit angry, and you might think that you're being punished for being honest by telling them about it. But here's the thing. They will find out anyway. Often medical notes are requested by the insurer at the time of claim, so it pays to be honest up front so that your expectations at claim time are perfectly calibrated. Now, medically, again, you may be totally fine. Your doctor might not be worried about it, but statistically, you might be more likely than others to make a claim compared to somebody else. Now, unless the insurer factors this in, you'll get way more value out of your medical insurance at the cost of everyone else. It's just not fair on them. So if in doubt, blurt it out. In many cases, if you don't tell the insurer about something they think is actually quite relevant, not only could they decline to pay out your claim, but they might actually cancel your policy too. Now, the fourth step in this checklist for medical insurance is work schemes. So, just like default KiwiSaver schemes, the option that comes with your employment is not always the best. Ideally, employers will give you choice among insurers, not just plans from one company. In New Zealand, however, you're likely not going to get choice from your employer, so you should just note the following. Now, often work schemes cover you for pre-existing conditions. This is a good thing. This is awesome if you have health issues already or concerns that you're already investigating. Usually, after a few years of continuous cover, they'll cover you for everything, but sometimes they'll cover you right from the start. Now, make sure that you can continue this medical policy when and if you leave your employer, especially if you have health concerns, because you might not be eligible to obtain health insurance outside of your work scheme. So, when you get it, hang on to it tight. Now, unless the plan is seriously discounted or hopefully free, don't add spouses or children to work schemes until you've done a bit more research. Could you get a better plan for a similar cost elsewhere? One of the questions that I would ask. Now, you can have two medical plans operating at the same time, by the way. You could have your work scheme going for all the simple stuff and for all the things that you're not excluded for, but you could also take out a separate private plan with maybe even a higher excess level to cover you for some of the more extensively covered issues like cancer. Okay, number five, the fifth step in this checklist for medical insurance, your children. Why should you bother adding your children to medical insurance? Well, you're making an investment in a clean insurance policy with no exclusions. That's what you're doing when you're taking out medical insurance on your child. If you get them while they're young, they'll thank you for it in the future. Well, they might not thank you for anything actually in the future, but let's pretend that they'll thank you for something here. If you add your child to your medical plan, usually within the first 3 months of being born, all you need to do is make a formal request. You don't actually need to complete paperwork and make a health disclosure. So do it within the first few months of them being born and you're sorted. Now, with children, it's cheaper to insure your kid than your cat. I pay about $50 for our cat, and I wonder why every day. But I only pay about $18 for a child. That's crazy, because what's more important, right? Like if my cat was drowning or my kid was drowning, who am I going to go after first, right? More than happy to deal with a wet pussy, save my child, right? Now, that came out really wrong. Okay, now moving right along to our sixth step, your parents. Why do I care about your parents? Well, I don't really. I care about you, and your parents could be a significant liability if they do not have health insurance. I'm not saying that they should go out there and get health insurance. They might not be able to get it, to be honest. But if they have it, they really need to keep it. Now, their premiums will skyrocket. And going back to what we talked about before, the premiums will increase every year because of your age. It's not unusual to hear of people over the age of 60 years old who pay more than $300 per month just on medical insurance. Now, here's why it's okay to keep it going. They will use the policy and they will likely get value out of it. The older you get, the more true that statement is. Now, if they let it go, they still will want to go private. They don't want to wait in the queue. They'll want to get treatment right away, and they will spend your inheritance doing it. In some cases, you may want to consider paying for the plan yourself. Now, I know it sounds terrible taking care of your parents just so you can get an inheritance, but, you know, everybody's situation is different. They could decrease their costs by downgrading with their current insurer to a lower value plan to make the premiums more affordable. They will be covered for less, but at least they will still have some medical insurance. They could consider even paying a really high excess, like $5,000. After a couple of new hips, heck, that's nothing to worry about. So, parents, important that you keep it going. The seventh and last step in medical insurance. But before we get to this, I just want to point out two common things or two common characteristics about medical insurance that I think people don't talk about enough or they're not aware enough. And here they are. Number one, are the policy wordings guaranteed? In our family, I'm with one health insurance provider and my wife is with a different health insurance provider. I never get any correspondence from my insurance company saying that they've changed the policy wordings because In my policy, they are guaranteed policy wordings. They cannot change. They are what they are. When I sign up to the policy, that's what it covered, and that's what it will always cover as long as I keep that policy going. My wife, on the other hand, is with a different provider who has the option to change the policy wording, to change what the policy will do at any stage, just by giving notice. So we routinely will get letters saying that we have changed what your policy does. There are limitations around how much you can cover and who you can go and see. Is that a good thing? Well, I guess the good thing about being able to change your policy wordings is that you can keep a lid on premium inflation, which is what we've already talked about. But when you're buying insurance, you kind of do want certainty, don't you? So having a guaranteed policy does have a lot of value. There's no right or wrong approach here, but it's important to note that there are two differences out there in the market, guaranteed and non-guaranteed policy wordings. Now, the second thing, probably the most important issue, and this ties in really closely to the other types of insurances that are out there that you can obtain, especially for cancer. What about Pharmac drugs? Well, we talked a little bit about this in this podcast with Rob Hennen from NIB. Pharmac is the funding agency that subsidizes some medicine. And there are a lot of options available in New Zealand of medicine that you can access, but not all of it is subsidized by Pharmac. Therefore, it's quite expensive. So, in most medical policy documents, there's an exclusion for non-Pharmac drugs, or at least a limitation, where the insurer does not have the obligation to pay for non-Pharmac medication. Now, some providers, and there are a few of them, some providers will pay for non-pharmac drugs, maybe just in relation to cancer or just full stop. Really important that you understand what your policy does. Not because you should change if it doesn't cover you for non-pharmac drugs, you just need to be aware of what the limitations are so that you could potentially implement a patch. And we're going to talk about that patch in next week's episode. So those are just the two characteristics, the two things that we often see as big, important issues that aren't often talked about enough. Now, number seven, the last step in our checklist for medical insurance. How should you obtain medical insurance? Well, you could do it through work. As we've discussed, you won't necessarily have the same level of choice if you get it through your work, but you will have some choice, hopefully, between the plans that that insurer does offer. So make sure that you understand your choices because it will be a subset of all of the available options in the market. In some cases, due to the fact that premiums may be subsidized by your employer or they may cover you for pre-existing conditions, it's a fantastic idea to go with a work scheme. The second way of obtaining medical insurance, direct. Going direct. Now, this will be easier going forward, no doubt. But the biggest caution around going direct to obtain medical insurance is that you need to ensure that you openly and honestly and accurately disclose everything under the sun about your health history. And most importantly, keep a copy of the disclosure, because at time of claim, this is where this will be tested. If there's an issue, you need to point somewhere to the fact that you told them about your bung knee, and now they need to cover it. Now, the third way to obtain medical insurance, go through an insurance advisor. Now, you're going to get more options. You're going to get a real person at the time of claim if there's a problem. And most importantly, you're going to get some guidance around which provider is best for you. So just to sum this one up, medical insurance ensures that you can get the full value out of your most important asset, yourself. It follows that no matter how you obtain your medical insurance, you really need to make an informed decision, and you really need to make a decision, an active decision on it. So no matter how you get it, whether it's direct or through a work scheme or through an advisor, take the process seriously and engage with it. You hopefully won't use your medical insurance for a long time, but given a long enough time horizon, you absolutely will. Because I can promise you this, you will die one day, and chances are you will die slowly. As soon as you develop a health condition, like high cholesterol, for example, you can't move providers, not without an exclusion anyway. So on that bombshell, on that positive note, we'll leave it there. Now, again, if you want a good recommendation of an insurance advisor in your area, please do feel free to reach out to me and I'll try to help you if I can. Otherwise, if you know of somebody in your community who does do insurance, reach out to them and ask them about health insurance. Put that on the agenda for next year around taking your health seriously and protecting your most important asset. Okay, so hopefully that 7-step checklist will help you to make a good decision. Now, definitely don't rely on any of that as financial advice. It's just a checklist to go over. definitely get some advice and take the decision seriously. So, now, next week, before I let you go, special announcement, bit of a Christmas present that I'm giving away. Make sure you tune in to next week's episode right at the very end, and I'll make an announcement around what our Christmas present is to you this year. So that's it for today, though, and I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll catch you next time. Cheers. I hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, then I'd encourage you to visit the show notes on your podcast player. And while you're there, sign up to our newsletter. If you're keen to see how good looking we are in real life, we're also on YouTube. Just search for the Everyday Investor. I hope that what you heard today will somehow encourage you to build real and lasting wealth in your world. But do remember to seek your own advice before acting on any of the material covered today. Catch you next time.